Well, first of all, thank you so much for coming. Thank you for being involved with what's going on here in this area and trying to make a difference, trying to be informed about what's going on. I think most of the reason we're in the situation we are in is because for too long we haven't been doing that. For decades, we've been entertaining ourselves to death. And because of that, the other side was able to move forward and do whatever they wanted to do as fast as they wanted to do it. And we didn't seem to care. But thankfully, I'm very thankful to God that people seem to be waking up. One of the main questions I get asked as I go to different places is, what provoked you to make a movie? A lot of people know that I'm a family man. I have 9 children that the Lord's blessed me with and a wonderful wife. And what motivated me to quit my job, take my savings, and make a film when I've never made a film before? Well, what it is, it's exactly what the same reason you're here tonight. At some point, you started to wake up and you realized something's happening to our country. It's just disintegrating before our eyes. And that concerned you and that concerned me. And I said, my goodness, if this continues in the direction it is headed, our children and our grandchildren are going to live in an absolute nightmare. We don't have to guess what happens when this continues down this road. We saw example after example after example in the 20th century, in many of our lifetimes. We saw where this always ends, when man is given the power over man to do what he will. So that concerned me. I think as I was a representative, and I wrote a letter to the editor, and some of you might have seen the movie. How many of you have not seen the entire movie Agenda, Grinding America Down? Okay, so many of you. Good. Well, in the movie, I get into this briefly, but I wrote a letter to the editor about a meeting I attended back in 1992 of the Communist Party. The Communist Party USA was splitting, and a new group was forming called the Committees of Correspondence. And an older gentleman asked me to go to that meeting, and I said, sure, that sounded like fun. And so I went, took notes for him, and wrote down what they said. When I was done, I wasn't very impressed with their agenda, so I sent the package, the stuff all up, sent it back to him, and got on with my life. And started having children, started some businesses. Well, little did I know, 16 years later, when I was a state representative in Idaho, one day the lights went on. There was some legislation coming through, some environmental regulations on business. And I had businessman after businessman just keep calling me saying, please don't pass this, it'll wreck my business. And all of a sudden the light went on. I hadn't thought about that meeting in 16 years. And I remember one of the key things they said back in 1992 is, we're going to use the environmental movement to destroy capitalism and free enterprise in America. And when they said that in 92, the environmental movement was a radical, just a bunch of nuts and flakes and whatever. And so it wasn't a serious movement. And I remember being a young 25, 26-year-old college student. I thought, how would you do that? It didn't even make sense in my notes. It's like, how would you destroy business? It didn't even make sense. But, of course, 16 years later, when An Inconvenient Truth had just come out, and the hottest topic going of any topic on any subject was global warming. That was in total control of everything. Every action in our life should be governed by how does it affect this issue. And so I all of a sudden go, oh my goodness, I can't believe this. This is incredible. And so that's what started me down my journey. As I wrote that letter to the editor, it exploded into a huge thing. I just said, this is the things that they said at a meeting I went to in 92. This is where we are today. It's time to wake up. So all I said, well, people were protesting at the Capitol, demanding I resign. It was a feature story on the evening news, and it became a huge thing. And I realized I'd hit on something very important that most people knew nothing about, and I didn't know enough about. One of the letters written in my defense was from an older gentleman, and he said, what Representative Bauer says is true, but it is nothing new. That was all outlined in a book in 1958. And, of course, I called him immediately and said, what book is that? And he said, it's The Naked Communist by Cleon Skousen. And some of the goals that Dick was talking about here. I got that book. I opened it up. And in the front, there's a list of 45 current communist goals from 1958. Cleon Skousen had been an undercover FBI agent. And he had gone into all the different communist cells in America and listened and then wrote down and kept notes of what are they all talking about? What are all these different groups, radical groups, trying to do? And this was the list of the 45 most popular things they were all talking about. And he put it in the book. And I know some of you have heard of some of these, but some of you haven't. So I'm going to read a few of these to you. Because when I read these, I knew instantly this needed to be a film. People needed to understand what was going on. I didn't know how it would happen, and I didn't know I was the one to do it. But I said, this is significant. Listen to a couple of these. Goal number 17, get control of the schools, use them as transmission belts for socialism, soften the curriculum, get control of teachers' associations. They've done every single part of that. You know, last year, the NEA, the National Education Association, which is the most powerful educational organization in America, in control of our public schools, in writing the curriculum, and training the teachers that teach the teachers and the teacher colleges, they passed a resolution. I want you to know how radical they are, where they're coming from. They passed a resolution to take October 1st throughout all our public schools to celebrate Chairman Mao's successful communist revolution in China. And that passed. That's a resolution they passed. Yes, this is a good thing to do. We must do it. Our kids must know about Chairman Mao. He's one of the greatest leaders in world history. That's what they're doing to our children and our grandchildren. Don't you kid yourself for one second. These schools are nothing like the schools you went through. Nothing. It is all about indoctrination. It's all about propaganda. And that's it. They're not even getting the reading, writing, arithmetic to go along with that. And that's intentional, too. I think it's interesting. When Obama appointed a czar, he was a safe school czar. Anybody know who that person is? Kevin Jennings. If he is our safe school czar, okay, he's going to keep our schools safe. That sounds good. We've got a guy that's going to really protect our children. Well, he is the founder of the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. And he also just happened to write the foreword for a book. Are you ready for the title of this book? He wrote the foreword to, promoting this, and he now is in charge of our public schools. The Queering of Elementary Education. He's our safe schools. Your kids are very safe there. Don't worry about them. They're going to turn out just great. It's unbelievable. As you dig in deeper and deeper, you realize that they understood, just like Lenin said, he goes, you give me 4 years to teach the children, and the seeds I have sown will never be uprooted. They knew you get the children, you get them young, and like he said, you will have a Bolshevik forever. And Hitler understood the same thing. When Hitler first came into power, the first thing he did is goes, I just want to be in charge of curriculum. He didn't do anything radical. He just said, I want the curriculum of the schools. And he started slowly weaving his propaganda into that. So here's another goal. Goal number 24, eliminate all laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship and a violation of free speech and free press. They knew that if you can get the culture to rot from the inside out, it'll just collapse. And then they can build it back up the way they want it. Goal number 25, break down cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography in books, magazines, motion pictures, radio, and TV. We have a pornographic society today. I hope you know that. I hope you haven't been so hardened and so just tarnished by what you see on TV. You've been desensitized to it. It's pornographic. The covers of the magazines in any Walmart or any grocery store in America, the women's magazines, those magazines alone, that would have been X-rated material in the 1950s. Just the cover shots of those magazines. I won't even let my boys go in there because I don't want them to see that and defile their minds. Goal number 26, present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. Do you understand how radical this goal was in 1958? You could not even mention the word homosexuality in mixed company, or you would so offend the audience, it would be unbelievable. You could not mention that. That was such an offensive word. You might conjure up an image in your mind. You could not mention that word in 1958. And today, it is normal, natural, and healthy. And don't kid yourself, that's what our children and grandchildren are being taught starting at 5 years old in most of our public schools. Do you understand that what a problem that is? In California, just last school year, students in all grades in Oakland, California's Redwood Heights Elementary School were given 2 days of gender diversity lessons designed to teach them that gender is not confined to the binary concept of two options. The lessons promoted gender neutrality, the concept that no distinctions between male and female should be legally allowed. They were taught gender fluidity, which means a boy might be a boy one day and a girl the next. That's what's being taught our children throughout this country. That's why someone like Obama can be elected president of the United States, because we have allowed them to take over our schools and teach our children and grandchildren this garbage. It's our fault. You have to know that too. There's no one else to blame except all of us, including me, looking in the mirror and saying, I have not stood up for the truth like I should. I have compromised after compromise after compromise, and now I'm simply, like the Bible says, you will reap what you sow. And that's what we're doing. We have Obama as president because we deserve to have Obama as president. Those of you that are praying Christians, as you pray for our country, we need to be praying that God will have mercy on us. Because we are getting exactly what we deserve, but we need to pray that he would be so kind and loving, like he has been many times in world history, that he'll have mercy on us. Goal number 27, infiltrate the churches and replace revealed religion with social religion. Discredit the Bible. Dick was talking about some of that with Jim Wallace. Tony Blair, who is a member of the Fabian Socialist Society, who is the former leader of the UK, he and Rick Warren are very good friends. In fact, Rick Warren opens up his pulpit to him to let him come talk on Sundays to his people, even though he himself claims to be a New Age pagan, and that's what, I mean, in his own right, that's what he would say he is. And it's unbelievable that how effective they have been. Rick Warren also worked with SDS when he was in college. I mean, he is from a radical background, and now after years of pulling us in, saying some pretty good things a lot of the time, he's starting to change his colors. You're going to see him over the next 5-10 years, as he's already starting to do, focus the entire effort of the church and the 35,000 churches he is in control of. There's 35,000 pastors every week that download his notes, his sermons, his tips, his, you know, everything for their church. So he has a tremendous influence on the churches throughout America and the world. And their focus is now becoming social justice. That's what Jesus would do. That's what Jesus would do, so we need to be doing it too. And, of course, saving planet Earth instead of saving lost souls. It's a big social club, and there's so much there I can't go into. But his mentor, Peter Drucker, is the one that taught him to turn the church into a business. And he has been very successful at that. Goal number 28, eliminate prayer or any phase of religious expression in the schools on the ground that it violates the principles of separation of church and state. Now, most of you will go, yeah, that's what happened. And it did. But this goal, when I read it, something clicked in my mind. And I said, wait a minute. Yeah, that happened. But it didn't happen until 4 years later. And when the U.S. Supreme Court took prayer out of our public schools, it was the first case in American history no precedents were given for their decision. They didn't say, we're taking prayer out because of this case, and this case leads us to believe it shouldn't be in there. They simply said, no, there's no precedents given. We are taking it out because we believe it violates the separation of church and state principle. Almost word for word what this goal is stated 4 years earlier. And I don't know about you, but no one likes to be the conspiracy nut and the seeing the black helicopters and the on and on and on. But I said to myself as I read that, no matter how much I don't want to admit it, and it's hard to believe that such a minuscule minority has had so much influence on our country. As I read through that list, I said, there is no way you could accomplish this many specific, 45 specific goals that are all radical and accomplish them all in a relatively short period of time unless you have an incredible amount of influence in our country. And that's when I realized, you know what? The communists, the Marxists, progressives, whatever you want to call them, they are alive and well. And they have trained many other useful idiots to believe, buy into their propaganda, and to help them in their accomplishing these goals. But they're a threat. They're a force that that has to be reckoned with. We can no longer just act like these things are happening by accident, because they are not. Our country hasn't disintegrated because that's just the way things go. I think most people believe that. That's why they don't do anything about it. That's why I made this film. I thought once I saw this information, I said, I want to give a tool to people where in 90 minutes they can understand, oh my goodness, I can't believe what they've done to our country. And my hope and prayer was that that would wake them up to action and to educate themselves, to educate others around them in their circle of influence, and to make a difference. The good news is this. Very few people have done to us what has been done. If we can wake the troops, there is no reason we cannot undo what has been done. But we have to have the same level of commitment. We have to have the same level of commitment that they do. And they have total and complete commitment. Do you know why? It's all they have. This is it. If you don't believe in God and eternity and Jesus Christ and the hope of heaven and that you're going to one day stand before Him to give an account for what you have done, you're going to just do whatever you can down here to get power, to get position, money, whatever. And so the very small, minuscule minority, they have done this because of their incredible lust for power. But then the vast majority of people pushing these things that are the useful idiots, they're not communists. They wouldn't even know what the word communism means, probably, if you ask them. They are people that have believed the lies that they're being told about the planets and the getting ready to have a disaster, or that children should be taught about homosexuality at 5 years old because it's just the right thing to do. And they're, oh, okay, I didn't know that. And so a lot of ignorant people out there, they get sucked into this. But here's why I think they get sucked into it. This is a very important point that our side has to understand. I've been to many rallies, environmental rallies, Occupy Wall Street and different things, talked to many college students all over the country. And as I saw them protesting a certain issue or talking about things, I'd come up to them and say, you know, what are you doing out here? And they'd, oh, I'm saving the planet or whatever. Oh, great, great, great. You know, what are you saving the planet from? Well, the global temperatures are skyrocketing. We're all going to die. Oh, wow, really? Well, how much have they gone up in the last 75 years? Oh, I don't know, but it's been a lot. I started to realize a couple things. One, facts did not lead them out there because they don't have the facts. They don't even know why they're out there, most of them. I thought, that's peculiar. And I thought, well, maybe the truth will set them free from that. And so many of them, I would present the facts after asking them very kindly about that, and they'd tell me. I said, well, do you know, here's the National Meteorological Society. Here's their thing for the last 75 years. And it shows how much temperatures have gone up worldwide in the last 75 years. Do you know what it is? Zero. Not even 0.1% in the last 75 years. If you go back 100, it's gone up a teeny bit. The last 75 years, it's gone up zero. Not even 0.1 degree. Now, when you show them that, what do you think is going to happen? Oh, my goodness, I can't believe. What are these people telling us? I mean, that's what you expect when they see truth right in their face. You expect all of a sudden to go, are you sure that's right? I'm going to check that out or whatever. No. You literally get this, and this dumbfounded me at first. You get them stepping back, literally almost. I've had some put their fingers in their ears, get away from me. get away from me. I thought, what are they doing? I don't even understand it. And I started to realize what it is we have allowed them to teach them throughout all our public schools and all our universities, that they are simply a highly evolved animal. Their life has no point, no purpose. In fact, in the last 5 to 10 years, we've taught them beyond that. We have told these young kids, you are a plague on this planet. Your very breathing is killing Mother Earth. Shame on you. And so we have so depressed them. That's why suicide rates are so high. We have so left them without any kind of hope, and we have allowed them to teach that to our children. That when anything comes along that looks like it has any purpose, of course they're going to jump on board with it. That's why the left has been able to capture all our children and grandchildren. We've given them no hope, no purpose, no meaning. And so when the left comes along and says, hey, we're saving the planet, you want to help us? Yeah, I want to do something that has purpose. And that's why they don't want me. I realize if they accept what I say is true, it takes away their entire purpose in life. Of course they don't want to listen to me. They're going to go, now my life is back to meaningless because you've proven to me global warming is a farce. Because that was their one little thing they could do once a week or once a month to feel like they had purpose and meaning. The good news is we know how to show how a person to have purpose and meaning. We know what the truth is. We are not going to win them back on our side with facts. We're going to win them back on our side by showing them the truth. That they are made in the image of God. They're not a highly evolved animal. There is a point to their existence. They were designed for a specific purpose and reason. And there is causes out there that are great and noble and true. And you can have a life that is so fulfilling, so meaningful, and so purposeful, it's incredible. That's how we're going to get them back. And that's the only way we're going to get them back. Because facts didn't take them away from us. And the facts won't bring them back. Elections. On our side, we've had trouble, at least during my lifetime. It's kind of sad. I'm 46 years old and I go, there's been one decent president in my lifetime. Isn't that sad? A wonderful country like this, and all the wonderful men in this country that would make wonderful presidents. And Ronald Reagan is the only light on the horizon in my entire lifetime. Someone that had a purpose, had meaning, had a character, had the ability to communicate his vision to people where they caught it and they wanted to do great things. But we haven't had one since then. And it's very sad. And it seems like it doesn't matter whether it's been a Democrat in office or a Republican. They've continued down the same path, maybe slower rates, but the same path. I mean, George W. Bush expanded government at one of the greatest rates in history of anyone. Even though he had 6 years, he had the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and didn't do anything with it. It's happened over and over again. But because of that, I want you to know this. This election, this next election, is absolutely the most important election in our lifetimes. No question about it whatsoever. But I also want to tell you this, that every election from here on out the rest of our lives is the most important election in our entire life. Because we cannot afford to go the wrong direction any longer. We cannot. Our country is on the verge of collapse in a million different ways, even economically alone. And economics are by far not the most important thing. But that's there. So I want to encourage you with this. Don't think if we get Obama out of there in November, our job is done. It is just beginning. It is just beginning. We seem to check out. We get our guy in there. We all check back out. Oh, we got another 4 years to go have fun and enjoy, especially if the stock market and stuff is doing well. We're pretty pathetic about that. If we're doing well money-wise, hey, everything's great. Why would we be worried about what's going on? We can't do that anymore, ever again. If we can get Romney in there as opposed to Obama, we need to put so much pressure on him every day of his presidency. He can't, his head's spinning. He's getting so many calls and emails and people marching out front of the Capitol, demanding he does the things he's talked about, demand he do the conservative things that he said he was for. And so put so much pressure on him, he has to do them whether he wants to do them or not. That's what we're not good at doing. We go to sleep once our guy gets in there, and that's right when the left puts pressure on our guy tremendously, and so he has to start compromising with them because we're not standing behind him, and so they start doing all these things. So we have to do that. Before our first break here, I'm going to tell you a story that goes in line with this to make you understand how we need to strategize more about what we are doing, how we are doing it, and how we are making a difference. Trevor Loudon is one of the gentlemen in my film that I interviewed. And those of you who haven't seen it, he is a gentleman that lives in New Zealand. He's a fantastic researcher, one of the best alive today. And he has a blog that just all this information on America and how the Marxists are taking over our country. And I started reading these things on there, and I couldn't believe it's such great, it's all documented, footnoted information. It's trevorloudon.com. It was fantastic. But I emailed him, hey, are you going to be in America anytime? I'd love to interview you for a movie I'm making. Well, finally it worked out to do that, and I met him in Seattle, and I interviewed him. But before I interviewed him, we started talking about a lot of different things, and something popped into my mind. I said, wait a minute, you're from New Zealand. Why are you doing this? Why are you spending your entire life trying to wake people up in America about the Marxist threat? I don't get it. And he turned to me and said what became the closing of my film, one of the most powerful lines in it. He said, don't you understand? If America goes down, we all go down. The free world is finished. America is the only thing stopping evil from just consuming the rest of the world overnight. He said if America went down, we would get a call the next morning from Red China, and they would say, you are part of a China now, and we would say, yes, sir, what do you want us to do? They don't even have a military there. He goes, right now they're building a huge military base right off New Zealand on one of the islands there. And so I started to realize this is so much more than just Americans and America. This is the light and the hope of the world, this country. Even from a Christian perspective, we have sent out most all the missionaries of the entire world, or we have funded them for the last 200 years. I mean, this country has been a blessing to the entire planet since its inception. Anyway, when I was with him, I asked him, I said, Trevor, in your opinion, who do you think, I know there's so many people involved in this, but who do you think is the most significant person in America's day that has had more influence and had more effect on just doing this agenda and just corrupt rotting us from the inside out? And I expected he was going to mention a name I'd heard of, but he didn't. He said, very quickly, without even thinking much about it, Robert Bourassage. I thought, who's Robert Bourassage? Never even heard of him. Robert Bourassage has been a radical on the left since the 60s. He was the head of IPS, which is Institute for Policy Studies, all during the 1970s, which started the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which is the most radical Marxist group in the U.S. Congress and is the most single powerful bloc in the U.S. Congress. Has over 80 members, and they're all of them tied to Marxist and radical progressive organizations. And that's in our U.S. House. And they're the most single, most powerful bloc. They have chairs of most of the committees. They have everything. And so I did something that's kind of uncharacteristic of me. I went to his website. I think it's Americans for Progress or something like that. And it's one of those good-sounding things, as they always have. And I typed an email. Oh, I'm making a film. And I acted like I was coming from their perspective on the changes in America from the 50s to today and how far we've come and how far we still need to go. And I was wondering if Robert Bourassage would do an interview. Well, about 45 minutes later, I got an email back. Yes, he'd be happy to. Here's the time and the date, which is another whole story. But their side, if they think they can influence anyone, will do it. And I made very clear this is a low-budget, independent film. It wasn't a big deal, whatever. Would you be interested? And unlike even the guys on our side, most of the 6-8 weeks of emails back and forth, they finally get a 30-minute interview with them. Because they're like, well, how many people are going to see it? And what's, you know, and it was very sobering to me. I go, that guy thought I don't care if it reaches 100 people. That's 100 people I've reached today. Yeah, I'll do the interview. I went there, interviewed him. On his desk was a picture of him and Castro together. And he apologized to me. Obama had just been elected. And he said, I'm sorry I've lost almost my whole staff to the Obama administration. I'm sorry that we're shorthanded now. They're all in his cabinet. They're all in the White House and the czars, everything else. And anyway, when I interviewed him, when I asked him, well, we got Obama in there now. What do we need to do? I knew what we would have said. Oh, we've got our man in there. We're done. He said something that was so profound and so powerful and so strategic. I remember when I left there, I said to my nephew, I said, no wonder we're losing. He said this. He said, now that he's in there, we've got to get to the left of him and we've got to push and yell and scream and complain about he's not doing anything he said he would do. We've got to just make so much noise on the left that will neutralize the right. It'll look like he's a moderate because he's got people on both sides complaining about him. These people are saying he's a Marxist, and these people say he's not doing anything. And I just sat there for a minute and thought, wow, they're thinkers, they're strategizers, they're planners. They're always thinking five steps ahead. What do we need to do? And anyway, because of that, I realized that's what we need to do. When we get our guy in there, we need to yell, holler, scream, fight, do anything we can to get their attention and demand that they do the things that they all say they're going to do when they're running. Doesn't matter who they are. They all tell us what we want to hear. But we have to demand that, and I think we can do that. In the next few minutes here, before we close, I've got so many different things I could talk about. It's tough, but I'm just going to pick a few key things. One is, a lot of people say, how have they done this? How is this little minuscule minority had so much influence over us that they've completely changed us from the inside out? And that's a good question. There was a gentleman named Antonio Gramsci, and some of you might know who he is if you've seen the movie. Antonio Gramsci was an Italian communist, and he had the ear of Lenin back in the 1920s. He actually went to Lenin, and he told Lenin, he said, listen, if you want to have a communist world, if you want to take over the entire world, you're going to have to do this particular thing in the countries that believe in God. You're not going to be able to have a Marxist revolution in countries that believe in God because they're not going to rise up and start killing each other off because they believe that is wrong. And Lenin didn't believe him, and so he sent it back to Italy where he got thrown in jail by Mussolini, and he ended up spending the rest of his life in there, and he died in prison. And while he was in prison, he wrote a book called Notes from Prison, which is over 2,000 pages long. And in it, he outlined his strategy of how to take a Judeo-Christian culture down from the inside. That he is, in my opinion, in the last 100 years, he is the most influential person that has lived. Because that is the left grabbed a hold of that, starting in the 30s, and have been using it as their textbook ever since of how to change us from within. One of his disciples was a man I'm sure you have heard of named Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky simply took Antonio Gramsci's ideas, kind of repackaged them for the 60s radicals and wrote Rules for Radicals, and which has had a tremendous amount of influence on our country. But what Alinsky said, how they create this change, is this. He said, change comes from the conflict. Change comes from the conflict. And what that means is this. It's really from Hegel. It's the Hegelian dialectic, but he explained it in terms that an average person could understand, and that's what these community organizations throughout the country have done to create change. They've created conflict. And so what it is, say that we believe in limited government. Okay, we believe in limited government. Well, if they want to change that, what they do is take the opposite idea, big government, big totalitarian dictatorship government, and they start ramming that against us. And at some point, they keep pushing as hard and far as they can until we stand up, which we finally do. Hey, we don't want that stuff. What are you talking about? We love our freedom. We love our limited government. And what do? Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. They step back a step or so and say, I'm sorry, you're right. Let's compromise. And so we move their direction, And that's where we're starting then. They pull back maybe 6 months, maybe a year later, and they come at us again. We need national health care. It's ridiculous. We don't have it. Bam, bam. We finally go, what are you talking about? Every country that has that, it's a failure. They say, oh, sorry, you're right, you're right. Let's compromise. Let's just do Obamacare where it's not mandatory. It's not, you know, whatever it is. They just keep watering it down. But every single time, the compromise is in their direction. And that's why over the last 50, 60 years, it's been a slow, through gradualism, we have started over there, and now we're over there. Because we're always the nice guys that go, oh, okay, I guess we'll compromise with them. At least we're not getting the dictatorship they asked for. We'll just settle for bigger government here. But we keep doing that decade after decade, and that's why we have what we have. Well, that's all from Antonio Gramsci and Saul Alinsky. And that's what we need to be wise about. We need to understand we cannot compromise on anything. They act like, in politics today, they act like compromise is a virtue. It is not. Because guess who we're always compromising with? Someone that is totally against us, that is totally either ignorant or evil in what they're trying to do to change the greatest country that has ever existed. But we let them do that. We can't do that any longer. And we need to get politicians in there that will refuse to compromise. They say simply, we will not do it. We don't care if you call us whatever. We're not going to do it. And that's what we need. The biggest problem I found when I was in the state legislature in Idaho, and Idaho is a conservative state, the people that are being attracted to politics are the wrong people altogether. I couldn't believe it. I mean, trying to get we have an 85% supermajority in the House, the Senate, and the governor. 85%. And it's very hard to get a piece of Republican legislation through there. And I realized we've got big problems. It was so discouraging being in there because of that. I thought we'd be able to do anything we wanted to do, and we couldn't get anything done. Because I realized most of these people in here, they don't belong in here. They love the name tag so much, they won't do anything to possibly jeopardize that. So even they might even believe the right way, but they're not going to vote the right way if they think there's any controversy involved whatsoever. And of course, when you're standing up for truth, what is the one thing we know? There is always controversy involved. We need to love controversy. We can do it kindly. We don't have to be rude, but we have to stand boldly for the truth with courage every single time. It doesn't matter what they're name calling. When I wrote my letter, half the letters, guess who they called me? Oh, Joe McCarthy's back. Care less. I said, thank you. What an honor to be mentioned as someone that's even a fraction of what that man was. We can't allow their name calling to bother us anymore. Period. I don't care if it's the homosexual issue, whatever. We can't. We can say, no, this is wrong. You will not teach it to our children, period. You can do whatever you want in the privacy of your own home, but we don't want to hear about it, and we don't want our children to hear about it. And that's it. And we're not going to allow them to do that. And then call us hateful, bigoted, whatever. We don't care. Because actually, in reality, what is it? We are being the most loving of all. We are stopping them from doing something that is destroying them and encouraging our children to be involved in something that is destroying them. If you look at the statistics on the homosexual life alone, if you had that as a category and didn't know what it was, but you saw the life expectancy, you saw the violence, you saw the suicide rates, you saw the different things, you would go, what is this group of people doing? They live 20 years less. You know, it cuts 20 years off your life. It is so unclean and unnatural. Their suicide rates are 10 times normal other people groups. What is happening that is destroying these people? And you realize, oh, that's the homosexual community? We're not being hateful by saying, hey, don't do that. And getting them help to get out of that, that's being loving. Sometimes love has to be tough. But regardless, maybe they don't care about or are trying to be loving, that's okay. They're not getting near our children, though. Because most of them, I've found as I've talked to them, as I've gone through life, they were molested as children, which is very, very sad. That's what got them into that to begin with. it twisted and perverted their innocent minds into thinking that was normal, and now they've suffered the consequences. They had to just accept this is normal and healthy and bought into it because they don't want to admit what had happened when they were younger was so evil like it was. They almost have to. And that's what's done this. It's a very sad thing. So we can be loving when we talk to these people, but we need to be firm. And we need to say, you can do whatever, but I'd love to help you. If you're not interested, that's fine, but you're not getting near my children or the children of this country, which they are doing right now in all of our schools, confusing these young, innocent, pure minds into believing that if you love your little boyfriend, that means, oh, you're homosexual. Instead of they're defiling that innocent, pure love of childhood and to make it into a perversion and twisting their innocent minds, and we can't allow that anymore. We also need to do something that John Dewey, who is the father of public education in America, he was one of the signers and writers of the Humanist Manifesto that came out in 1933. And what they did in 1933, we need to do again today, which we haven't done in a long time. This is the seventh plank of the Humanist Manifesto. It says this: religion consists of those actions, purposes, and experiences which are humanly significant. Nothing human is alien to the religious. It includes labor, art, science, philosophy, love, friendship, recreation, all that is in its degree expressive of intelligible, satisfying human living. The distinction, and then they said this, the distinction between the sacred and the secular can no longer be maintained. What are you saying by that? Is what we believe as secular humanists, and that's their religion. Even the Supreme Court, you know, says that's a religion. What they believe in that, they realize we can't separate that out from other parts of our life now. It has to consume everything about our life. Our religion of humanism has to be just penetrating in our art, in our science, philosophy, our friendships, our love. We need to push this everywhere that we go. We can't separate this out anymore. And what's not humorous but unbelievable is that's about the same time the Christian church was pulling back in the 1930s going, I guess maybe we, you know, Darwinism was starting to come on the scene more powerfully, and they started stepping back. Well, maybe we don't have the answers for everything. They started to doubt what the Bible says for this evolution. And so they pulled out, and the humanists pulled right in and completely took over. And that's why they've just had so much success at what they've done. Because we pulled out, and they just were able to pull in right into the vacuum we left. When the church pulled out, they said, hey, we'll be happy to teach the children. We'll be happy to be in control of the schools. We'll be happy to be in control of the media. And that's what's happened. And it's very sad. The second thing we have to realize and really understand, so we take this seriously, is that we're in a war. We are in a war for our country, for the Judeo-Christian principles it was founded upon. We're in a war of worldviews, and it's not ending in our lifetime. It has to be a way of life from here on out. Our country, our wonderful country, needs us. And at this point, we're still not asked to give the sacrifice that all those hundreds of thousands of wonderful boys did all over the world so we could be free. We're not asked that. We're not at that level yet. But we're going to be there if we don't do anything right now. Okay? We're going to be there. We have to be committed to the cause because it is right, it is good, and it is true. And we have to stand up for that boldly so our children and grandchildren see us doing that, and they'll know this is important to mom and dad or grandma and grandpa. This is significant. And that will encourage them to join with us in this mission. In the Humanist Manifesto 2, which came out in 1973, they clearly understood this point. And that's when they really cranked it up a notch in their battle against us. This is what they said. I am convinced that the battle for humankind's future must be waged and won in the public school classroom by teachers that correctly perceive their role as proselytizers of a new faith, a religion of humanity that recognizes and respects the spark of what theologians call divinity in every human being. The classroom must and will become an arena of conflict between the old and the new. What do you think they're talking about by the old? We don't have to guess. Here they're going to tell us. Here's the old. The rotting corpse of Christianity, together with all its adjacent evils and misery, and the new faith of humanism, splendid with the promise of a world in which we will finally love thy neighbor as thyself. They have been successful because they understand it's a battle. It's a war. We have not been successful because we have not. We've just thought, oh, these crazies will go away one of these days. But we let them teach our children. We let them teach the children in our communities. And now that's why we're reaping what we've sown in that. It's vital that we really step things up. One of the main threats that is coming at us right now, and I want to just briefly talk about this, I do to every group I go to, in case you're not tuned into it, and you might be, because I think it's the tool they are going to use to really finish us off. And what that is, that's the Agenda 21, the environmental movement, better known as sustainable development. And some of you, it looks like maybe you don't know as much about that. Sustainable development in this Agenda 21 is from the United Nations, and it is the tool and the vehicle they are going to use, I believe, to take private property in America. They're going to be able to take it under the guise of, hey, we're saving the planet. If we don't do this, we're all going to die. So we can't allow this any longer. If you go to their own website, the United Nations, and look it up and look at all the things they say are not sustainable, it will shock you. A few of those are this. They say right on their own website, single-family homes. We cannot allow people to live in single-family homes anymore. They have to live in multifamily dwellings in the city, away from nature, so they're not destroying the environment. They have a map right on there you can look at, and it shows America and what their plan is for America. Has all the, I think it's the red color, where it will be completely off-limits to all human beings, then a different color that shows where we'll have limited access, and then the other color that shows where we will be living, which is very few spots in the entire United States. Now, most of us, as I myself, when I first heard this, I go, oh, what a laugh. But then I realized we can't laugh at these things anymore. When the most powerful organization in the world is pushing it, the United Nations, which is getting more and more power every day of our troops, of world events, of laws throughout the world, everything else, and when all the richest men in the world are behind it. The Bill Gates, the George Soroses, all that, they're totally behind it. So these things can't be laughed at anymore. And that's the thing. So no matter how crazy these things are, we have to stand against them. But this is, I could go on and on about it, but it's all based on lies. It is all based on an idea of we should worship the planet instead of the human, well, not the humans, but instead of the creator of the planet, and that humans are the most vile, they're a disease on this planet. The animals, they should have roam free on this planet. We should be constricted so we don't interfere with their wonderful lives of, you know, whatever they're doing. And so it's important. But the tactics they have used are the same tactics they have used in everything they do. And this is, I want to briefly go over these with you so you'll notice them in other areas they attack us too. Hitler once said, he said, if you want people to believe your lies, they have to be big lies. They will not believe little lies. They have to be big lies, and they have to be repeated often. And I thought about that when I first read that. I go, that doesn't sound right. But I started to think about it, and I just applied it even to this environmental movement. And I said, you know what? That's exactly what they do. What do they tell us to be scared of? Global warming, right? When what should we be scared of? Global cooling. Global cooling is a disaster. You don't have enough food. Everyone's starving to death. When you have longer winters, there's not a long enough growing season. That is a problem if that happens. And it has happened different times in world history. Global warming is actually a wonderful thing. You know, if we could do, this is serious, if we could do something to raise global temperatures a degree or two, it would be the greatest thing we could ever possibly do for the planet, especially the poor. We would have an abundance of food like you could not believe because we'd have longer growing season. It would just be an incredible harvest throughout the world. And we know this because there's been warmer times in world history. Do you ever wonder when you study geography why Greenland is called Greenland? You think, hey, this is 50 feet of ice today. Why do they call it Greenland? Well, as we've dug down now under that 50 feet of ice, we find vineyards and wine presses and everything else showing that, yes, there was much warmer times in world history. And it was a wonderful thing. It wasn't a bad thing. It was there was prosperity and abundance for everyone. But we're supposed to be scared of that. They tell us CO2 is the enemy. How crazy is that? I thought they were green. What do all the green things live on? CO2. We've allowed them to tell a complete lie about the most common basic understanding of how things work. The plants make oxygen, and we breathe out carbon dioxide, and it's a wonderful, happy relationship. Again, you think this is crazy, but Bill Gates, I saw him on a YouTube video just the other day, talking before a big audience. This is the richest man in the world, and he said this, and when he said it, the crowd went nuts. I didn't know he was as radical as he is. He's a nut, and I didn't realize that. He said, we have to cut CO2 emissions in America to zero. It's laughable, except when you go, wait a minute, that's the richest man in the world. Now, wait a minute, he has donated so much money to our public schools, he is now starting to write the curriculum, his organization, for a lot of our public schools. And he says we have to cut it to zero. We have to. And the crowd went nuts. Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Do you know this? CO2, I've talked to some scientists about this. Again, if we could get CO2 to double in the atmosphere, which we cannot, we have almost just such a minuscule impact on this planet, the way it's designed, the evaporation off the oceans and the cycles to clean the rain that cleans the air and all the things, we have hardly almost no impact. But if we could, do you know what happens if we could get 100% more CO2 in the atmosphere? Crop production increases 35%. They've done greenhouse studies where they pumped up even to 200, 300%, and it keeps going for a while there where you have oak trees growing in about 30 years to full maturity instead of 50 or 60 years. It's the greatest thing ever. It's literally a fertilizer that has an end finally, but we couldn't produce enough CO2 to get to 700%, then it finally starts stunning their growth or whatever. But it's incredible. But we're told CO2 is the enemy. We have to stop this. If you're green, you're against CO2. Well, we have to expose that lie. Say it's the opposite. If you're not green, you're against CO2. Those of us that are green and love the trees, which I do, love the green, beautiful farms and everything that where man is being productive and using the wonderful resources we have to be a blessing to people throughout the world, then we love CO2. It's the exact opposite. And then the last lie they combine in with that, which are the foundations of the environmental movement, is we have an overpopulation disaster on the horizon. Okay? Let me tell you some facts I didn't know until I found them out. Not only is that not true, here's the truth. We are getting ready to enter a period of population declines worldwide that has never happened before in world history, that is going to be devastating to the economies of all countries in the world. Adam Smith himself said, you cannot have a prospering economy with declining populations. We have so rejected God's blessing of children. And there's 70 countries in the world right now, 70 countries that are dying off. They're not even producing enough children to reproduce themselves. You have to have 2.1 children per family to stay stagnant. And there's 70 countries around the world that are well below that. All the European countries, and then many others. America's right at 2.1%, or 2.1 children per family. We're right at now at 7 billion. They're going to keep going to about 8.5 billion. Not because there's more people being born, it's because people are living longer because of modern medicine. We are living so much longer than we used to. That's why the population is going up. But once we hit the tipping point there, demographers, and there's a movie, Demographic Winter, that's all demographers talking. They said once we hit that curve, it's going down for as long as the demographer eye can see, hundreds of years. Because you can't turn things around quickly in this when you've You can't have more adults today than you had children 30 years ago. You can't change that quickly. And so they said, but things aren't changing. And so anyway, this is just another lie, a total lie they give us. We're running out of resources. That's why we've got to do this sustainable development. No, it's the opposite. We have so many resources, we don't know what to do with it. Right here in Montana, all your forests are going to rot because you're not allowed to use them and cut them down, which creates healthy, abundant forests. When I drove in here, I could not believe it. It's 50 to 70% of all your trees in your beautiful mountains are dead. Do you think you're ever going to be able to stop a wildfire that goes through there? Not in a million years. I mean, it's crazy. But we've allowed them to do that. We got to start standing up and saying, sorry, we're not doing that. We're not playing your game because it's based on a total and complete lie. Agenda 21 by the United Nations, they say in their own paper, our goal in this is to inventory and control every aspect of human life. And that's what they're doing. And we got to stand up against it because it's deadly. Now, in closing here, I want to leave you with a few things that might be encouraging to you. First of all, it's this. We are not each individually responsible for saving America or saving the world. Don't let your burden be too big on that, because that can overwhelm you where you end up doing nothing. Don't do that. But you are accountable, and I am accountable, for your circle of influence. That's all you're accountable for. You say, I only got three friends. That's okay. Try to influence them. Be a good example to them. Take the time to take them out to eat. Give them good books and movies to watch. Invite them over and start talking and educating them about these issues and how important it is that they get involved so we don't lose our country. If each of us were able to just get influence one person each year, our ranks would double every single year. That's a lot. I used to be a math teacher. When it hits that curve, it really is a lot. So this can be done. Those of you that are Christians, you need to be praying for your country. Okay? Things are dark and dim and dire right now. There's no question about it. We need to do what we can do, but we also need to pray and ask God for His help. Many times in world history, God has stepped in when a very small percentage of people turned to Him and said, we are sorry for what we have done. We have just carelessly wasted the time you've given us here on earth. And we want to make a difference. Would you help us? And He has done that. I love some examples out of the Bible of Sodom and Gomorrah. It's one of my favorite examples. Here was two huge cities, both vile and corrupt to the core. They said the thought of man was evil continually. I mean, just nothing good was going on in these two huge cities. And what did God say to Abraham? If you can find 10 people there that are righteous, I will not unleash my wrath on them that they deserve. I'll hold it back. That's how long-suffering God is. That's amazing. In my opinion, I think if Abraham would have the guts to say, God, if there's one, would you spare him? I think God would have said yes. I do. He is so long-suffering, it's inconceivable to our minds. The story of Nineveh in the Bible, a corrupt civilization, again, rotten to the core. God sends Jonah. He didn't want to go, but he went. They did repent and said, we are sorry for what we have done. And God spared them for another couple hundred years before He finally wiped them out. So, with God, all things are possible. And we have to remember that. It's very important. I've got so many things here, but I'm going to leave you with my favorite poem in closing. Because it speaks to us today as if it was written yesterday, but it was written 100 years ago by a man named Rudyard Kipling. And I memorized this back when I was in college because it was so powerful. It reads like it was written yesterday, but it's 100 years old, which shows us what? The battles we're fighting have always been around. There's always been evil wanting to do evil and destroy what is good. But normally, traditionally, in American history, we've stood up against it and said, no, not in my neighborhood, not in my community, not in my state, not in my country. Get that garbage out of here. And we stood up, especially the pastors. And when they stood up, their entire congregations were standing right behind them. And that's why all these evil men with their evil plans that have always been around weren't able to do anything in America. Well, here's this poem. It's called Gods of the Copybook Headings. And it is so important. What it is, it's like he is Father Time, and he's looking throughout all history, and he's comparing the gods of the marketplace, which are the get-quick schemes of man, the things that always promise a lot, they act like, but they never deliver. And he's comparing those to the gods of the copybook headings. So the gods of the copybook headings to the gods of the marketplace. And the gods of the copybook headings, some of you might remember, how many of you know what a copybook is? Just a few. Like in American history, back when our schools were teaching something, every student had a book called a copybook. And what it was a book, they'd open it up, and on the top line of the page, they would have a proverb, a truth. You know, you reap what you sow or whatever. And then all the rest of the lines on that book would be blank. And to learn their penmanship, they would write down, you reap what you sow, you reap what you sow. They'd write it 25 times down to practice their penmanship. But, of course, after you've written that 25 times, you've memorized that little piece of truth, and you'll carry it with you the rest of your life. Well, that's the gods of the copybook headings, the little things of truth that stand the test of time, whether people like them or not, and he's comparing those to the gods of the marketplace. And here, this is how it goes. As I pass through my incarnations in every age and race, I make my proper prostrations to the gods of the marketplace. Peering through reverent fingers, I watched them flourish and fall, but the gods of the copybook headings I noticed outlasted them all. We were living in trees when they met us, and they showed us each in turn that water would certainly wet us and fire would certainly burn, but we found them lacking in uplift, vision, and breadth of mind, so we left them to teach the gorillas while we followed the march of mankind. We moved as the spirit listed. They never altered their pace, being neither cloud nor windboard, like the gods of the marketplace. But they always caught up with our progress, and presently word would come that a tribe had been wiped off its ice field, or the lights had gone out in Rome. With all the hopes our world is built on, they were utterly out of touch. They denied that the moon was Stilton, which is a blue cheese. They denied she was even Dutch. They denied that wishes were horses. They denied that a pig had wings. So we follow the gods of the market who promised us these beautiful things. When the Cambrian measures were forming, they promised perpetual peace. They swore if we gave them our weapons, the wars of the tribes would cease. But when we disarmed, they sold us and delivered us bound to our foe. And the gods of the copybook heading said, stick to the devil, you know. On the first feminine sandstones, we were promised the fuller life, which started by loving our neighbor and ended by loving his wife, till our women had no more children, and our men lost reason and faith, and the gods of the copybook heading said, the wages of sin is death. In the Carboniferous epoch, we were promised abundance for all by robbing selected Peter to pay for collective Paul. But though we had plenty of money, there was nothing our money could buy, and the gods of the copybook heading said, if you don't work, you die. Then the gods of the market tumbled, and their smooth-tongued wizards withdrew, and the hearts of the meanest were humbled, and began to believe it was true, that all is not gold that glitters, and two makes four. And the gods of the copybook headings limped up to explain it once more. As it will be in the future, it was at the birth of man. There are only four things certain since social progress began, that a dog returns to his vomit, and that a sow returns to her mire, and the fool's burnt bandaged finger goes wobbling back to the fire. And after all this is accomplished, and the brave new world begins, when all men are paid for existing, and no man must pay for his sins, as surely as water will wet us, and as surely as fire will burn, the gods of the copybook headings with terror and slaughter return. You will always reap what you sow. Period. There is no way to defy God's laws, his principles, and not reap what you've sown. But we have the truth on our side, we have history on our side, and we need to do what we can to make a difference and pray that God will help us in doing that. because this country is worth fighting for. Our children and our grandchildren are worth fighting for. And that means we need to be generous. If you have good candidates in this area that are running for office, you support them sacrificially. If you see good causes, you support them sacrificially. If you see men in pulpits standing up for the truth, you support them sacrificially. If you're going to a church that has a pathetic, chicken-livered, whatever, pastor that will not stand up for all of biblical truth, you should not be there. I don't care if you've been there 30 years. We can't do that anymore. That's what has destroyed us. We've allowed the churches to become so pathetic that they're not standing up in the gates for truth. We've got to be willing to make these sacrifices. Yes, they are big. Yes, they're tough, but we have to do it because we're going to lose this thing if we don't. We're right at the edge, and we've got to do it. And we've got to do it boldly with courage. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it very, very much.